Welcome to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a five-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. Happy Sunday, everyone. January 29th, 2023. We got a big podcast coming your way, even though there's only one USC game to cover. This is, as always, Chase, joined by, as always, Nick. Nick, how you doing?
Doing awesome, Chase. Just great game that we witnessed on Thursday. And, it's Boogie's world. We're all just living in it. So
right. It's great. Yeah, no kidding. So because of some personal scheduling conflicts I had, like I wanted to originally do the pod, you know, right after this game, as soon as it was such a crazy and amazing game. Not unlike last year's game at Galen against UCLA. But then I got delayed because of scheduling. And then there were some other subsequent games, I think they were kind of interesting. So I'm kind of in some ways glad that we got to a little more of a perspective on what's going on nationally, which we'll rope in later. But yeah, first, let's just jump right into it. So we're coming off the situation to give a reminder and the backstory here. SC had lost UCLA at Pauley by 2 points. Was down quite a bit at halftime, made a furious comeback in the second half, actually took a lead at one point, shockingly, end up losing because we gave up an offensive rebound on a three, which led to a second three attempt by Jalen Clark that went in. And we weren't able to, there was a foul called on offensive foul call on next offensive possession. So we weren't able to tie and we lost that game by 2 points. But since then, we've played pretty well. And that was the last game we played, by the way, without Vince Uwachukwu. Since then, we've played the Mountain Schools at home. We played the Arizona Schools in the desert. And then we were coming into this UCLA game. The four games against the Mountain Schools and Arizona Schools were 3-1. It looked really good pretty much in three of the four games. The Arizona game in Tucson was the exception. Came to the game, I think I predicted it would be a 4.5-point dog. We were. I think that even got up to 5 at some point before the game. And we actually started the game to be fair here. We started this game playing kind of picking up the defense for the most part that we had played in that second half against UCLA and Pauley. So to remind everyone, in the second half against Pauley, we only gave up 16 points in the second half to UCLA after giving up in the first half, giving up 44 points. So when we start this game against UCLA, we had a lead. Then we kind of went really cold. I think we had like a 14-9 lead. Went really cold. We're stuck on 14 points for quite a while in the first half. End up getting to, I think the score is 20-19 at about the 4-minute mark of the first half. So the first 16 minutes of the first half of that game, UCLA had only scored 20 points on us, and that's building off of the previous 20 minutes where they'd only scored six, they'd only scored 16. So we're talking about a 36-minute period against UCLA where they've only scored 36 points against us. And then they promptly went on a 17-6 run in those last 4 minutes that resulted in a 12-point halftime lead for UCLA. Why don't we stop right there for now? And Nick, to the best of your memory, because I know we're going to, I think, by the way, we're going to probably have some video on this later in the week. What was your sense going into halftime against UCLA?
Yeah, I thought there was a chance we lost that game. You can say the last 4 minutes. I think that's totally accurate. But even the last, like, minute and a half, I think, like, if we could have gotten it down to 8, like, that would have put us in a decent spot. But I thought it being at 12, you know, just might be too much to overcome. Now they were able to overcome that and more in the first 10 minutes of the second half, and we'll talk about that. But I think it was just we were really sloppy. Those live ball turnovers are just killers, right? Like, if you throw it throw it away and they get a layup, it's almost like a pick six in football, right? So you're thrown away the offensive possession, and then you're not even putting yourself in position to play a defensive half court possession. So those were killers. I know Bailey got out in transition one time. And, you know, credit UCLA, like they were making shots. I think Tiger hit a three late and in that that first half. And then he hit that runner where we didn't guard the ball screen well. So, yeah, it was just it was not good. But at the same time, it didn't feel like UCLA dominated us in the first half, you know, where it was to the point where we couldn't come back. Right. It wasn't like a physical mismatch where they had a bunch of NBA lottery picks and we just didn't have the talent. So, yeah, that was kind of my first half impression.
Yeah. And I echo that. It really did seem like we had played. I mean, we're now to go, you know, tracing back, KenPom will break down these half segments into 10-minute increments. So second half against UCLA and Pauley, we gave up 6 points in the first 10 minutes, 10 points in the next 10 minutes. The first 10 minutes at Galen, we gave up 11 points. So we're now tracking, we're a grand total of 27 points in 30 minutes. And we came out, and I think we both agreed, we were hedging ball screens from the five, very strong, very tough. There were a couple lapses here and there, but for the most part, we were really playing solid defense. I think probably almost as good a defense as you can play against UCLA, the style that they play. And yeah. And then we had that lap. And I should say, so we had those 30 minutes, the first 10 minutes of the game at Galen. And then the next 6 minutes, we gave up 15 points in those next, we gave up 9 points in that next 6 minutes, which is not quite the pace we were on, but 9 points in 6 minutes. College basketball is not bad. You're basically at a 60 point pace at that point. So, you know, you're still looking at a really strong pace over what had been 36 minutes until we really just lost concentration. We left guys open. We just weren't playing that really tight defense. And this is kind of defense that we're able to play. I mean, when we're playing our best defense, we're almost as good as any team in the country playing defense. Now we have basic lapses when it comes to rebounding. We're not a good rebounding team, so that needs to be understood. But we guard the two-point shot as well as anybody in the country. And when we're really on, we can really guard the three-point shot as well. So we come out there and played really pretty good defense for the first – you start to see some softness, but pretty good defense for the first 16 minutes of this kind of like mental lapse for that four-minute period that really put us behind the ball. Then we come out in the second – oh, and by the way, I should – reiterate going into this game. Nick had given us when we did the picks last week, Nick had said, okay, I think we got 45% chance of winning this game. And I completely chickened out and said we had more than 1% chance. So props to Nick for actually picking and having the courage to pick it. And, you know, down on me for being a complete coward. Okay. So we come out in the second half. And I know we gave up 1-3 to Singleton in the first couple minutes. But other than that, I think we only gave up 3 more points in those first 10 minutes. And honestly, I have to say, it did not seem like we were doing anything tremendously different on defense. We had just gotten back to playing that tight, focused defense that we had played for the last 20 minutes at Pauley and for the first 16 minutes at the Galen Center. We, for the most part, other than that 4-minute lapse in the end of the first half, we've played 60 really strong minutes of defense. We kept doing it, and the difference in the second half really was, and it wasn't like we went to some new, crazy offensive system. It was we were pushing the ball up court, and we were getting favorable matchups, and Boogie was nailing shots, shot after shot after shot, exploiting the matchups with Tiger Campbell. I mean, it really made clear that Campbell was not able to guard him, just too short. Vice versa was just the opposite because there was that one drive where Campbell thought he had beaten Boogie and Boogie came back and just blocked him from behind. Boogie really dominated Tiger Campbell this game. Campbell ended up with 14 points, but Boogie was just way too much for him. And you really started to see that around the 14-minute mark, which is when Boogie just started going crazy. So, I guess what were your thoughts as we start getting in the second half? And by golly, we're eating away at their lead. And I think by the time we get to the 10-minute mark, we're ahead in this game.
Yeah, exactly. I thought we also rebounded better in the second half. So we were minus eight on the offensive glass in the first half and only minus two in the second half. And I mean, I guess UCLA, if you're minus two and a half on the offensive glass, that's a pretty good number. They're a very good offensive rebounding team. Number one in the Pac-12 in conference play, and number 22 in the country. And Josh just had a lot of trouble keeping Bona off the offensive glass in the first 10 minutes of that game, I thought. And that was another thing is, like UCLA, if you're giving them second chances, they're skilled enough players to the point where, Singleton's going to get his from three if you, have any sort of lapse, and Campbell's skilled too, and you got Jaime. So we definitely tightened up the rebounding a little bit, even though we lost the boards overall. With respect to Boogie, yeah, I mean, he was just cooking. Coach Infield talked about it in the press conference, kind of broke it down. What do we do differently in the second half offensively that led to that explosion? And it's just that they focus less on like the ball movement aspects of the offense and more on just the matchup aspects of the offense. What they were doing is they were screening Boogie's guy to get UCLA to switch that, getting Boogie a more favorable one-on-one matchup. So one time he got switched onto Amari Bailey and he had a three over him. Another time he got switched onto Jaime Jaquez, who's, a pretty good defender, but still like not quick enough to guard him one-on-one. He had a jumper over him. So really it was more of a matchup dependent thing where, you got Boogie this favorable isolation matchup that he could take advantage of. So yeah, like I credit to the staff for making that move, but you also need to have an elite shot maker to make that work. And Boogie was hitting everything. I mean, just a phenomenal offensive second half.
And we should say, Tanner, I think we'll cover this a little bit later because people ask some questions on the board and I want to answer them in a special segment. But as the second half is progressing, you're starting to see that UCLA's players are struggling a lot with our length. Tiger Campbell struggling with the length. Jaime Jaquez, he ended up with 15 points in the game, but I don't think he ever had like a signature Jaime Jaquez post-up move the entire game. And he barely had one at the game with Pauly. Whereas last season, he just obliterated Isaiah Mobley with his post moves. I mean, Isaiah could not stay with him. And he would do those post moves and do the fadeaways. And there was none of that from Singleton. From Jaquez. I don't know if Jaquez is a little fatigued at this point of the season because they put so much of a scoring burden on him. And obviously, Bailey had been out, so there was even more of a scoring burden on him. I'm just not sure about that. But he did not, he's not, last year he kind of like terrified me as an offensive half court player. And in this game, even though he got his 15, he was not scary. I mean, he was like a guy that, look, you guard him and we just had the length to guard him. And I don't know if that's just, hey, combination of guys like Trey White and Kobe Johnson, that they're long defenders and they can stay with them. They're not going to get sucked. He's not going to be able to blow past them. They're quick enough to stay with them. I don't know. You have any thoughts on that?
I totally agree. He had one deep fadeaway in the second half from about 20 feet, which was just like a tip your hat shot, right?
Yes,
shooting
absolutely.
That long of a two, fading away, semi-contested, right? Like, that's fine. Like you're not gonna beat us if you shoot that.
I think there was actually a closeout on that. It was good defense. It's pretty much as good as you could play, I think.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it's another game where Kobe just shows his value, right? Like he had three steals. This was a game where we won the turnover battle, and UCLA in conference play, they're number one on offense and defense in terms of turning it over. They don't turn it over at all, and they get a lot of turnovers. And nationally on the year, they're 13th in the country in offensive turnover margin and 8th in defensive turnover margin. So,
and I believe I've heard the stat was that no prior in the season had they lost a turnover margin in any game.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So to win the turnover margin against them, going plus four in that, that's a big deal. And credit to Kobe on that. Drew had like quite a few turnovers in that game, especially in the first half. But outside of that, we really took over the, took care of the ball. Boogie, and this is kind of a thing that I think people are starting to pick up on too. In his last five games, he's only had one game, just that Arizona game where he had more than one turnover. And then in these last two games, he's had 10 assists and one turnover. So if he can replicate that, that's a big deal there. Right. And, it's some of it is like, he's not, he's getting into more of these ISO situations where he's shooting as opposed to trying to make a play and thread the needle on a pass. So I think there's some of that going on too, but, he's making his free throws. The shot making is just such a leg up to be able to have a guy you can isolate like that late in the clock and still make it a reasonable clip. But I think like he has really turned into a first team all Pac-12 player. His defense too. I mean, he's getting more steals in these last couple weeks here. Almost doubled the steal rate this year that he had last year. So that's really good to see as well. And he's sixth in the conference now in steal rate and league play. So he's a first team all Pac-12 player as far as I'm concerned. And that's been really key these last few games.
Yep, absolutely. Well, and then it came to the closeout of the game. I mean, I know the UCLA had been able to pull within two with a few minutes to go, and then we just hit the key shots, and Boogie hit these crazy threes, and, we closed it out 17-for-18 from the free throw line. This is building off the game against Arizona State where we were, 16-for-16? Was it 14-for-14. So, yeah, that free throw is coming around.
31-for-32, last two games.
Boogie was 10-for-10, so props to Boogie. Whatever Kobe does with his free throw shooting, he has been money the last, 2 months on his free throw shooting. It just seems like everything, he's been shooting just kind of goes in. He's shooting in conference play 89% from free throw line, 24-for-27. So, we try to get him the ball late in the game. So if we're ahead, he gets fouled and he's hitting him. So hopefully that keeps happening. Held on, win, huge win. As the game is starting, we're getting the commentary from Dave Pasch and Bill Walton on ESPN broadcast. They're telling us, UCLA with a win, I think they were going to be a one seed. USC was Lunardi, we ended the game as the last team in on the tournament. So, that's a big win. And now Lunardi has us with a bye, one of the last teams with a bye. Jerry Palm with CBS has this better position, and we can talk about that in a second. But just contextualizing this win, and Ian Fields now 6-3 against McCrone. And Andy won the first six, Mick won the next three. Andy comes back and wins this one. Andy's still been winning the games at Galen Center. I do have to say that in watching these, now we've played 100. Oh, so this was the other stat. We've played 80 minutes of basketball against UCLA. If you take the last 60 minutes and remove that 4-minute stretch at the end of the first half, this last game, SC has outscored UCLA over that period of time, which is whatever, 56 minutes of basketball, by 40 points. It has not been close. SC has been dominating UCLA since the first half. Even with a bad 4-minute run, SC still has a 30-point advantage over the last 60 minutes of basketball. It has not been close between these two teams. I do think that this is not just, SC scouting them or SC's playing extra hard against them. SC looked like the better basketball team, quite frankly. It has looked like the better basketball team now for a game and a half against UCLA.
Yeah, no, it's great to have that, especially in your rivalry game. It kind of makes you wonder, right? Like if we would have pulled that Pauly game out, we'd be sitting at 8-2 in conference play and leading the conference, right? Yeah. And it's really too bad we couldn't get over the top there. But Even though like UCLA has, the number three KenPom team right now, and KenPom still kind of thinks they're going to run away with the Pac-12, which I think is crazy to say at this point. Like, we could make that game up. I'm not saying we will, but like, yeah, UCLA could drop the game to the Mountain Schools. We could pick it up there and maybe get up to the 2 or 1 seed. So I wouldn't pick SC to win the conference or anything like that right now, but it's in play, right? Especially with the way we've played these last few weeks here.
I think it's a play. Mick Cronin has shown an ability to beat pretty much every single team unless they're coached by Dana Altman, Andy Enfield, or Tommy Lloyd. I think last season UCLA lost to Arizona State. But let's see. But their only other loss, only other losses were to Arizona, USC, and Oregon. And the year before that, they had one loss to Colorado. I guess they lost to Colorado once, Washington State once. Generally speaking, like, Cronin has a pretty good beat on how to beat the majority of teams in the conference. He just struggles with USC, Oregon, and Arizona and Tommy Lloyd. So those teams are, he's got the away game. The trip to Oregon is going to be interesting. I think UCLA is in a good position to beat the Washington schools at home and the Bay Area schools at home. So the Mountain road trip is going to be interesting. Those are just games where those teams, I think, match up better against SC than they do against UCLA, because it's not so much like a question of athleticism as a question of just, kind of like maintaining focus and, just basketball skills. UCLA is going to run into problems, against like Arizona, I think, again, because they're, I don't know if they've got the talent advantage, and against Oregon. I think Oregon might present a lot of problems to UCLA. So that's kind of my read on them. They're very well suited to beat teams like Colorado and Washington State, even though that was a tight game at Pullman. And certainly when they played Utah without Brandon Carlson, it's a little tougher when they're going against teams that, got those top 100 recruits and the top 50 recruits like Arizona and Oregon have. So that's just my kind of read on it. I mean, do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think they'll get through the Washingtons at home. I do worry about the Washington State game for us a little bit, just because they, have Gay and they're pretty good on the glass and they have shooting, right? And that really hurt us in the game up in Pullman. I do like that we have that game first. We have a week to prepare, a little bit of time for us to kind of recover from the physicality the last few weeks here. And, just knowing that we lost up there, there's not going to be like a motivational issue, with the whole, Washington State's 10-13 matchup. They can't beat us in LA because, if they actually beat us up in Pullman. So it's a decent spot, but just personnel wise, I do worry about that a little bit for us more than for UCLA. I think the Bruins will struggle with Oregon. Oregon can, they have length and athleticism, and Dana's done pretty well against them historically. And they've looked pretty good at home the last couple weeks here, with the exception of that ASU game. That's their only home loss since that Houston game, I believe. So, that'll be interesting. With Colorado and Utah, I would pick UCLA to get through those as well, especially with the way Colorado's playing. But Brandon Carlson, he's just a weapon. It's funny, right? He shredded us completely in the first half, and we were able to win that game comfortably still. And then in the game after that, he goes, I don't know if you saw this, against Washington State, he goes 11 of 12 from the field, 8 for 8 from 2, and 3 of 4 from 3 against the Cougars. Just an unbelievable offensive effort. He's just really good. I think he'd be a first team All Pac-12 player the season ended today for sure. So we'll see. Weird things happen. at that Huntsman Center place. They have, you know, crazy crowds there. They, you know, smoked Arizona there. So I wouldn't say like it's an unwinnable game or anything for SD or for UCLA. You know, both teams I think are going to have to earn it there. With the Arizona thing, it's interesting, right? Because, you know, you could say like, oh, Arizona's gotten it together. They're a top five team and all that. And maybe they are, maybe that's true. But hey, I mean, they still have three conference losses and still have to play at USC, at UCLA, and have already played both those schools at home so far. So I don't know. If I had to pick a team to win the conference, I'd probably just say UCLA because they have, you know, one fewer loss than Arizona and SC, and they've got that home game against Arizona, where I think I'd pick UCLA right now, even though I could definitely see Arizona going in there and winning.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Palmer Boy has the same. He has UCLA winning the conference by one game, which is they're a half game up on Arizona right now. Just to bounce around the conference this past weekend, it was a good performance by Arizona. They tougher game in Pullman. I mean, obviously they're coming. They pull, you know, Washington State beat them pretty handily at McHale, which is kind of a shocking game. Came back, led. It was a close game, led, pulled ahead a little bit. And, you know, just a little too much for Washington State. They won by five. And then they come back and, you know, have zero problem with Washington on Saturday. I'm going to talk about them in 1 second. Good weekend for Oregon. They sweep the Mountain Schools. Tougher game against Colorado. Easy game against Utah. Where they pulled ahead. So the Mountain Schools both split, right, on and both people, Oregon State won and Oregon State lost it at Oregon. Arizona State, very tough weekend. Lose in overtime to Washington. Lose to Washington State on Saturday. So, you know, that those losses kind of hurt us a little bit because I think they dropped out of that victory at in Tempe is now temporarily not a tier one. I think I might be wrong about that, but I think we lost a tier one victory.
Oh, it's quad one. It's still quad one. So actually, the quad one we lost was that Auburn. So they
Auburn. Okay, so hopefully Auburn. Yeah. Okay, so hopefully Auburn comes back and just takes care of business. And you know they had a kind of a tricky game over the weekend because they had to play a road game, which at in Morgantown, which I thought they got hosed in the officiating, but whatever. Okay. So, I should call right a loss both games. I didn't realize that. Well, they worked to beat them.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. Jeez. So there's rough there, right? So, bottom line here is there's been a little bit of separation now where I think it's clear at this moment in time that UCLA, Arizona, and USC is the third team, I think, definitively now. SC, I mean, I think it's SC and Utah technically are tied to the rankings because they're both four games above 500. But Utah's played two more games, still has two games against Colorado. Now we've got to go out there to play, so that's just keep in mind, but we beat them, obviously. Oregon has looked better. We'll see what happens when they have to go on the road this weekend. They're out at the Arizona schools. I mean, them, you know, Oregon at Arizona State is a huge game for the Sun Devils. So we'll see if they rise to the occasion, can do anything there. One thing we've noticed with Oregon, you know, Cuisinart has played pretty well for them. They have basically just stopped playing Colaware. He's almost like he's, you know, is he even on the team? I don't know. that's a, you know, he's still projected as a first round pick and he's not playing at all. And maybe that's helping their team out. They're playing Nate Biddle. He's putting up pretty good numbers. It looks like he had three blocks against Utah. Brandon Carlson at 13 points, but he was dreadful from the field, 2 for 14 against Oregon. So they knew how to kind of shut him down. We'll see how Oregon does on the road. They're kind of a huge question mark. I suppose they're theoretically, and they could, you know, their next four games are Arizona, Arizona State, USC, UCLA. I mean, they were to win those four games or something. I mean, they're all of a sudden, I think, a tournament team again, you know, and easily probably.
And you know, that Arizona game's winnable for him. Like, Dana Altman's done really well historically against Arizona. So they swept Arizona in 2019, 2020, and 2021. And then in Tommy Lloyd's first year, they went down to the McHale against that juggernaut Arizona team and lost in overtime, even though they weren't very good last year. And then obviously they beat them this year up in Eugene. So, he kind of has their number, at least over these last few years. We'll see if they can pull it off. They're going to be substantial underdogs, but you never know. Dana, does kind of get his teams going later in the season, which really screws the Pac-12 since they underperform in the non-con and then come back in conference and are a different team. And it's one of the reasons the Pac-12's historically been underseeded performances, like what Oregon has done over the years. So
Yeah, and
yeah, they're.
speaking of screwing in the Pac-10 or Pac-12, I want to get into this Washington thing because they lose to the Arizona game, so they beat Arizona State, right? Which is a potential Arizona State's a potential tournament team for the Pac-12. So Arizona State wins that game, is really a good team thing for the conference, and they beat them in overtime. Come back and just, I mean, the game against Arizona was about as non-competitive as of a game, for a home game for a team of that caliber as you will ever see. I mean, Hopkins was absolutely happy to stay in that zone defense and let Arizona just tear it up. Carissa looked, for a while he looked like Steph Curry. I think he hit six of his first like 7 3 attempts. I know later on he missed a few, but just it felt like Washington going through the motions, doesn't have the shoot. They just look like a team with no drive on defense. Just kind of everything is amiss. And there is talent on that team. I mean, they shouldn't be this bad. And I worry when they come to the Galen, and SC is already coming off a tough game against Washington State, is SC going to be just not up for the game? And there's going to be, Keon Brooks going to go crazy, or Braxton Mia going to go crazy. But it's a team that's got legit players, but my goodness, they are really, really bad. I think it's terrible for the conference.
Geez, not much to add there. They gave up 57 points in the second half to Arizona, and they actually led at the 10-minute mark. So they were up 23-19. I think they led by like close to double digits a few minutes before that, and they got close to 50% in the KenPom odds to win at some point in that game. But just no fight. Umar Ballo goes 9 for 9 from the field. So that's fun. Tubelis, pretty efficient, 25 points. Not much to add. Creasa, yeah, Steph, he's Steph Curry now. But yeah, like it's frustrating with these non-conference performances. I guess at least they did beat St. Mary's, which is
Yes.
kind of hilarious. That happens. We can talk about the St. Mary's thing too. I watched that game against BYU last night. I don't know if you caught any of that, but
I did
they
not
went
see it.
like they went on this last second turnaround jumper, and I know that KenPom has them at 7. That's a joke. Like, there's no way in hell that team's the number 7 team in the country. I'm sorry. Like, they lose to Washington. They lost to that Colorado State team. It's just yet another example of like how you can't take these rankings, even though they're predictive in a sense. Like, there are so many of these teams that I think are just, maybe they're ranked properly based on net efficiency in the algorithm. I think that's undoubtedly true, but I think if SC played St. Mary's tomorrow, they'd smoke them. I really do.
As long as SC, yeah, SC was, really thought they needed to win the game. I mean, yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And yes, I don't get it. And if you look to me, if you lose to Washington, I know it was on, I know the game was where was it? It was in Anaheim. Yeah. So but if you lose to Washington, You're not the number 17 team in the country, or seven. You're not the number seven team in the country if you lose to Washington.
Yeah,
and that goes for SC. But if you lose to Washington, Galen, it applies as well. That is just it's unreal. I don't know. Like at this point with Hopkins, like what's the plan here? Because like I don't think he can possibly upgrade his personnel more than in, like he recruited Keon Manifield. I think he's like a really good recruit. He brought him in. He's like a really nice player. Braxton Mia is way better than I thought he'd be. He has kept on, you know, coming back next year. Probably won't know how to play him correctly. You got Keon Brooks from Kentucky. Like he's not going to get his talent is not going to be any better really than it currently is. And this is the product that this is worse than what we saw from Romar. I mean, it is kind of just crazy how bad it is, especially when you're like your philosophy is this defensive guru and playing the zone defense and it's just getting carved up. I just don't know where he goes from here. I think, you know, the mods on the 24/7 site for Washington, who would never previously even entertain the suggestion that Hopkins might be gone, like after this season, are starting to finally talk about the possibility. I mean, we're leaving the conference anyway, but you know, I don't know how much longer they're going to put up with us, and I don't know. I don't know necessarily what Hopkins brings to the table at this point. I guess he's a nice
guy. Just go get Kyle Smith from Washington State and go try to steal like Jade Mullins and Gay out of the portal. I mean, like you had those guys or that Washington team to make the tournament, right?
Well, you're right. If Kyle Smith is coach.
Yeah, right. That factor too. Like that would help with just running better sets and all that too. Minifield's interesting, right? Because I totally agree with you that like he's a talented kid, like he's got some skill to his game and he's quick and clearly like a high major level guard, right? I mean, to positively impact the game as a freshman is really, really hard in college basketball. I think he's actually done that for that team. So I kind of wonder if one of these Big Ten schools just gets him out of the portal in the offseason. I mean, he's from Michigan, right? So
yeah.
I don't know how much he loves Seattle, but if I'm like, I don't know, Michigan, right? How about like the University of Michigan? Like they could really use him. I watched them today, that Michigan team. They're a disaster. I mean, Penn State just ran them off the floor. And they've got like this guy, Doug McDaniel, as their point guard, you know, in Michigan, at Michigan. And he's a disaster. I mean, Minifield is miles better than this kid. So, I'm guessing the plan for Washington is we can't afford to buy out Mike Hopkins' contract and he's going to get another year is how it's going to shake out. But, I guess all their guys are eligible to return next year, I think. So,
yeah, I think the only guy who's definitely gone is Bay. I think everybody else has a COVID year who's a senior, including, I mean, you know, Noah Williams and, you know, the TCU transfer.
Fuller, right?
Fuller, and, yeah, PJ Fuller.
John Brooks has one more year too. So like, you could see a path where like if Minifield really pops that there's enough progression for them to become a bubble team or something like that. But again, that assumes like they retain all these players and, you know, you don't have Braxton Mia declaring for the draft or something crazy like that too. Right. So.
Well, I think Brooks will probably, I don't know if he's going to, he really did. It was his whole point to come to play two seasons up. Well, I don't know. Maybe, I guess.
Yeah. Probably not, but like, where is he going? Right.
So it's
interesting. Like you can see the same thing. Like you've got the Stanford team, like just throwing away the Harrison Ingram, right? So you got, you know, other schools that are a disaster too. I mean, even like Washington State, right? Washington State is pretty talented. Like there's no way, you know, they should be definitively out of the tournament right now. But, you know, when you lose to Prairie View A&M and Hawaii and UNLV, Utah State, they just completely threw away that non-conference to the point where now they're, you know, they're not going to be a tournament team, even though I think they're clearly better than a team like Arizona State, right? So it's unfortunate for the conference, but, you know, then again, like, we got one more year in it, and, you know, then maybe they can merge with the Mountain West after that and just lose the likes of Boise State and Steve Alford coach Nevada every right. game.
Well, speaking of, you know, not, you know, being in the Pac-12, there was a fun event for other conferences this on Saturday, which was the Big 12.
Great transition. Excellent job, Chase.
Big 12 SEC Challenge. This is exactly the kind of thing that you don't, you know, we don't get nice things playing in the Pac-12. We get the Pac-12 HBCU Challenge, which was a disaster for the conference. So there was five games in Big 12 team home games and five for SEC home teams. I have to say the Big 12 won this series. They won all five of their home games. They won two on the road, including Kansas beating Kentucky. The only wins for the SEC, now number two in the nation, Alabama, team we both really, really have a high opinion of, just got taken to school and beaten up bad by Oklahoma in Norman. Kansas State held their own against Florida. Tennessee took care of business at home against Texas. That was a good win, but it's not representative of what we saw for the most part. TCU did lose at Mississippi State, but that game went to overtime. Missouri actually handled itself against Iowa State. But then, you know, you had Auburn losing that game to West Virginia, which hurt us. Hopefully Auburn bounces back. I was not happy the way that game was called, officiated. Baylor takes care of business at home against Arkansas. That was a really good game. And then LSU loses at home. Texas Tech, that's a bad loss for the SEC. Texas Tech, I think, has like one win or something, or no wins in the Big 12.
Zero.
And Oklahoma State won at home against Ole Miss. So now Texas A&M, who's one of the best SEC schools, did not play in this thing because there's too many teams in the SEC. They played Vanderbilt instead. So it wasn't like the SEC had all their top teams and they were a bit top heavy as it is, but Auburn lost, Alabama lost, Arkansas lost. I mean, that's a big deal. And of course, Kentucky lost. So I think it's a really neat event, but it did show Big 12. They held their own. Any thoughts when we saw?
Yeah, props to the Big 12. I did think the SEC, even in a few of their losses, were competitive. Like, I know that Arkansas, that I thought Baylor would actually kind of run Arkansas in that game in Waco, and Arkansas held up and really competed in that game. So props to those guys. But, you know, Baylor's guards at the end of the day are just too much for a lot of these teams. And they were, you know, plus seven on turnovers. So credit to the Bears there. The most relevant game for SC fans, right, it's that Auburn-West Virginia game. I actually think Auburn's pretty clearly better than West Virginia. You know, you had that first half where Eric Stevenson was just hitting these, like, ridiculously high difficulty shots, and he finished the game with 30 points. And, you know, you wonder, like, is this the same guy we saw at Washington under Hopkins? It's just crazy because he didn't do any of that for Washington. So I don't know what happened to that dude, but the officiating was bad, and Auburn just dug themselves too big of a hole in the first half at the end of the day. So yeah, I mean, with respect to the net, which is another kind of relevant thing here, so Auburn dropped from 30 to 31 in the net, which made our home win against Auburn a quad two game when it was previously a quad one game. Now, like, they didn't really drop, I don't think, in their algorithm. What happened is Duke just beat Georgia Tech by like 50 points or something. So they ended up jumping Auburn, moving from like 32 to 24 because they happened to beat Georgia Tech, which is insane and a problem with their algorithm, that you have this team jumping eight spots near the top of the rankings because they beat Georgia Tech. It's crazy. But I do think Auburn, there's this national media narrative out there that Auburn is the super overrated team. among these top teams. And I think it's total nonsense. And it's part of the reason is because they're saying like, oh, they lost at USC and like USC is no good. I heard that narrative thrown out there. Or that they lost to Memphis. I watched Memphis today. Like that Memphis team is good. Like they're gonna win their first round game in the NCAA tournament, I think, and then give a top seed hell in the second round. They're kind of a similar team to USC. They're really good defensively, struggle a little bit on the glass, and have a really good lead guard. But no, I think Auburn, I think they're gonna rally and be fine. They have a great home environment, and I expect them to bounce back. But yeah, like the Kansas win was impressive. It's kind of funny too, like overall in that challenge, the teams that are like semi-affiliated with our schedule this year did pretty well. Like Auburn, I think they actually covered the spread against West Virginia. That was a 3.5 point line. Tennessee looked very good against Texas. That was not a competitive game. And then Kansas, who also played in that Bahamas tournament, they got run by Tennessee in the final there. They look great at Rupp. Like Kentucky was, I think, 2.5 or 3 point favorites in that game. And Kansas just looked pretty superior throughout. And I thought the sets that Bill Self ran in that game were really, really strong. Good challenge for the Big 12 overall. And it just shows the depth of that conference. And I think one of the things that hurts the Pac-12, right, is these bottom feeder schools are just, they're not good. It's hard to, pump your analytics against them because they're so lowly rated. And then you have the occasional game, right, where like Colorado's seen this, right? Oregon State and Cal knock off Colorado. And it makes Colorado look bad. And it doesn't make Oregon State or Cal look good because everybody thinks they suck already. So that's, I guess, like, yeah, just kind of my thing is it just shows that there's a lot of value to having this narrative built up around your conference that every team in the conference is good. And the Pac-12 just doesn't have that right now.
Yeah. And by the way, Tennessee is now number one in KenPom. So SC has played the number one team and the number three team twice. That's UCLA. So, it's not like been a cakewalk schedule for SC. Colorado, gosh. So I think Texas A&M is 7-1 in the SEC, only lost to Kentucky. Colorado beat them. Colorado beat Tennessee, the number one team in the country. And Colorado has lost to Grambling State, UMass, Washington, Cal, Washington twice, actually, and Oregon State. Just a weird, super weird. By the way, so, KJ Simpson is only a sophomore. We saw him last year as a freshman. Who are you taking, KJ Simpson as a freshman or Keon Minifield as a freshman?
Wow. I think I'd stick with KJ for now.
I think there might be some. I was that would have been my natural inclination. By the numbers, though, right now, I think Minifield's better. But I like KJ. I mean, I like him better. But, interesting. Okay.
What about this though? Just quick, just kind of expanding on that a little bit. What do you think about like Minifield and KJ next year against what we can expect from Isaiah Collier?
Well, Collier should be better than both of them as freshmen, right? I mean, so who's an analog there? Who are the freshman point guards right now? Because I mean, so. We're missing, like, there is a little bit of a weird situation, right? Because Scoot Henderson obviously left his class. And then Nick Smith is a point guard, right? He hasn't played. So let's see. Let me look this up. Oh, by the way, just quick on Hoop Lens. I think there's an error on the site because I think they accidentally have Ozaiah's numbers mixed with Vince's numbers. I think Ozaiah's number four, right? Vince's number three. And they just messed up the numbers. Vince, 30 possessions against UCLA. 1.33 points per possession on offense when he's in the game. We gave up 0.87 points per possession when he was in the game. Best offense, best defense. There's 30 possessions of any player on our team.
And he can get a rebound too.
That's nice. That's a nice thing to have. But yeah, that's pretty impressive. Okay, so who are the guys that we might be? Because obviously,
so White, you can look back to 2021, right?
That I think it's better, right? So
right, you had Kennedy Chandler, who was a really good player for Tennessee, right? Then you had JD Davison, who was kind of up and down for Bama. And then Ty Washington, right? Who I think was a solid player for Tennessee.
But, yeah, I Collier is a little bigger than all those guys. JD Davison did play big sometimes, right? So I don't want to, but Collier feels like he plays bigger and more physical than those guys. Maybe that's just my perception of him against high school guys.
I think he's just better too. Just a better player than.
I mean, look, Tyrese Hunter was very good as a freshman. He might have been arguably better than those guys. I'm not sure.
Then you go back to like the Cade Cunningham, Jalen Suggs year.
Right. So yeah. So it's not. It's obviously, I don't think, fair to try to compare him to like Cunningham because of the height situation, but. There are some similarities with Suggs. Suggs is a crazy good athlete, but they do some of the same type of things. And Collier's a pretty good athlete too. So I think Suggs is someone that he could be a little bit like. Now, I'm wondering if, playing with Andy's going to give him a lot more rope. So you might see him have a higher turnover rate and stuff like that, especially to start. But I would lean more towards Suggs, I think. I don't know if I'm totally stepping out of line there, but that's my kind of thought there. As far as what expectations could look like. I think, if you went back the previous year, you have like Nico Mannion. I think he's better than Nico Mannion. Yeah. So that's my thinking. Where are you at with that?
Yeah, I'm also kind of I'm a little surprised. Like a lot of these freshman point guards ranked pretty highly have done pretty well in year one. It's not quite like that wing position, right?
Yeah.
Like these wings get rated highly and they do nothing in year one. Historically the bigs have done pretty well too. Like you look at Evan and Onyeka and what they did in their first years, but it does seem like, and then you go all the way back to like Deer and Fox, right? And Lonzo and those guys, right? Like it is a position where if you are that level of prospect, you can have a positive impact on your team in that first year.
What do you think about Colin Sexton?
I think Sexton's a little bit better of an athlete, but not as much of a wizard with the passing. Like Sexton was like a little bit combo-y. I think like there's some similar things he does as like Devin Dotson, I think, back when he was at Kansas. He's a little bit bigger, a little bit better of an athlete, but
What about Dennis Smith?
Dennis Smith, I think, was he's kind of in that Sexton mold, I think, just like a little bit better of an athlete, but less of a true one. Mm-hmm. I actually think there's some Lonzo things there with the passing and the size at the position, mm-hmm. Where he can help you win without, scoring and hitting a bunch of threes. I know that Lonzo was pretty good from deep in his year at UCLA. So don't want to take anything away from Lonzo, but I think there's some overlap. Like he's not quite like the wizard that Lonzo is, where like in transition he makes these crazy transition passes. And I do think like he can get downhill. Like in some of these more recent high school games, like the guy can really get to the rim whenever he wants. And a lot of that is just his strength and physicality at the position. And we'll have to see if that's totally translatable to the college game, just because he's going to be playing against bigger bodies and longer dudes. But I'm pretty impressed with his ability to get to the hoop and score, like, even, you know, even when he's not shooting well from three.
So let's go to some of our user questions here that we have from the website. And I will just read them off. This is from David Law, longtime poster. Questions for Nick and Chase. Would Bronny be McDonald's All-American if his last name were Smith? I've never seen him play, so I don't have a clue. But I'm just wondering if he made it on the merits. So I think we probably have slightly different opinions on this. I will say this. I think if Bronny played for Compton Magic and his name was Smith, there's a chance he could be a McDonald's All-American. If he didn't, if instead of playing for Sierra Canyon and he wasn't playing for Compton Magic, instead that he was just playing for, let's say, you know, Chaminade High School, which is right not far from Sierra Canyon, and he played for, you know, just some random AAU team and for even EYBL, I think he would not be a McDonald's All-American. What's your take on that?
I actually totally agree with that. Like, the name helps, but I think it's a pretty justifiable pick, especially based on what he's done recently, kind of into his senior year. He's also not the worst McDonald's All-American this year. So Brandon Garrison from Oklahoma City, who's an Oklahoma State signee, he's not a top 40 player in the composite rankings of 24/7, and he's a McDonald's All-American. So there's some randomness to these picks. Like Kajani Wright was a McDonald's All-American.
Right. Well, and the, you know, the Ware twins were McDonald's All-Americans. So and right. They went to – Kajani Wright was Compton Magic, and the Ware twins went to Modern Day, especially for these LA-based recruits or Southern California-based recruits. I've noticed over time that, you know, the politics matter, and, you know – I would have been shocked if Bronny was not an American given everything, but you know who he's to me, he's like a borderline guy, and you need to have things weighing in your favor. So if he was not Bronny James, but you know, Bronny Smith, you know, I think he had a chance to make it, but you just need the right circumstances. Okay. Having watched UCLA in person, and then again on replay. So this is good because he's seeing them in person. I have not seen them in person. I was surprised how unathletic the Bruins appear to be. Singleton is a good shooter, but that's all. Bailey takes forever to get a shot off. And other than Campbell, it seems like they have nobody who can separate. And of course, he's tiny. Is that a correct observation? If which case they wouldn't appear to be a real Final Four team, or did I catch them on a bad night? Okay, so I touched on this before, but I think I'm starting to generally agree with this. And people have started to make a lot of hay about the fact that UCLA has struggled against the better teams they've played. And they have their best win is against Kentucky as far as like KenPom ratings. I guess Maryland is technically, but you know, when you're talking about Maryland, Kentucky, Kentucky is more athletic. Kentucky is like the most athletically gifted team they have beaten. But teams like Illinois and Baylor and Arizona, which are athletically gifted, they've really struggled with. USC is athletically gifted. They've struggled with them. I think your observations are correct about separation. Part of that is just, you know, some of it is twitchiness. Some of it is style. A guy like Jalen Clark makes for a fantastic two-way player against certain teams. But if you know how to guard him, he's less effective. Singleton is like a guy you just cannot leave open. It doesn't matter who he's playing. You leave him open, he's going to hit a shot, period. But other than that, he's somewhat limited physically. We talked about Hawkes. Hawkes can get separation on certain shots, but if you have players that can defend him, and apparently SC does, unlike last year, he has really struggled. So I think my verdict on this is the hope was that guys like Bona, who is very athletic, I should say, I think Bona is, you know, a legit athlete, and then Amari Bailey, were going to get them that surge of athleticism to make up for like the shot making they lost, with Juzang and Jules Bernard. But I don't know if it's been quite enough. I think Bailey is athletic, but he's a little bit deliberate, and he's not like a super great handle, like where he could just destroy guys off his handle and get wide open shots whenever he wants them. He's really much more effective just kind of like playing near the basket, and he's like surprisingly long, so he can, you know, he's pretty decent at getting rebounds and scoring around the basket. So yeah, I think there's an issue there with her athleticism. I think even I listened to the podcast that Tracy Pearson and David Woods did the other day. I think they even kind of recognize that a little bit. Can they make it to the Final Four? Yes, I think they can. Notwithstanding that, it's going to be about matchups and depending on who they play against. And I would not shortchange them because I think Mick's a really good coach. And they made the Final Four 2 years ago in almost the final game. And wasn't like they had that much. It was like they had great athletes back then either. It was just the shot making was just insane. So that's my thought on that. What are your thoughts there, Nick?
Yeah, so I think like it's definitely a multi-part question. You have to kind of break it down piece by piece. So I do think like Singleton is kind of a one-trick pony as a shooter. I would also add that Singleton doesn't turn the ball over, which is also a skill, which just makes him a really effective offensive weapon if you have the right pieces around him. With Bailey, right, like he has athleticism, but how much of that is functional athleticism, right? So like it's really easy to like look at a guy in like a dunk line and see that he can throw down a crazy dunk without any defense. But that's not really functional to the game of basketball, right? Like he had that one play in the first half where he showed his speed off of that Drew Peterson turnover and got that layup. He is a pretty dynamic player in the open floor. But then you get him into the half court, right? He really struggled against our length. He doesn't have any floater game or any in-between game. He did use his athleticism to get one offensive rebound and put back. But if you're looking to him as like some ISO scorer in the half court, it's just not going to happen. I think with Jalen Clark, his athleticism is a little bit, he is also pretty athletic. I think his athleticism is more functional just because he's such a good off-ball defender, gets a lot of steals. I do think he's a little bit better off-ball than on-ball, similar to D'Anthony. But his offense just has such a long way to go. And I think people kind of, overlooked that in the non-conference when they were playing against worse teams, or he was getting, steals and layups, even in that Maryland game. But in conference play now, Jalen Clark is he's shooting 33%. He's 25 for 75 from inside the arc in conference play, and he's 7 for 27 from outside the arc, so 26% for a 41% true shooting percentage in conference play. So he's been one of the worst shooters in the Pac-12, if not the worst shooter in conference play. He's still playable because he does have, he does take care of the ball for the most part. He's such a prolific defender and very good rebounder. But as you saw in the USC game, when he goes 0-for-7, that's a big problem for your offense. When it comes to the Final Four, I do think they can make it. Sure. I mean, it's like you said, it depends on what their matchups are, what happens, in front of them in the bracket, and they're going to get a pretty high seed. I'd imagine they're going to get like a 2 or a 3 seed. So if you have that, like you get a, virtual bye in the first rounds, which helps a lot, then you only have to win a few games to get there. I don't think I would pick them to make the Final Four, because if they, do run into an athletic, 3 seed or 1 seed, I think that kind of team could cause them a lot of problems. But I mean, sure, they can make the Final Four, just like I think USC can make the Final Four. Would I bet on it? Probably not.
Okay. Cronin, question number 3. Mick Cronin appears to be a bigger whiner than the average coach. Is that his reputation, or once again, did I just catch him on a bad night? Okay. So I have to preface this by saying that I actually like Mick Cronin a lot. I don't think he actually has a reputation for being a whiner. I think he has a reputation of being a strong taskmaster on his own players and being very, very tough on his own players. You don't normally see the kind of total breakdown that he had at the end of that game, where he just kind of pulled a Bobby Hurley and just completely lost his SH, you know what, and just to act on camera, told the official FU, but the actual word. I don't normally see that from him, and it kind of surprised me. He seemed to have collected himself in the post game. I don't think he's a whiner. I do think he is extremely tense. He's very tough on his players, but I do think he lost control at the end of the SC game.
Yeah, he does have a history of losing control at times. I mean, in some of those Cincinnati Xavier rivalry games.
The brawl, right? Yeah,
the brawl. You had Mick Cronin screaming at Xavier guys. You know, at the end of one of the games, he got into like a verbal face-to-face altercation with JP McCura. So he's done this, and he does have the reputation for being a hothead and wearing players out and just losing it, especially in practice. And I do think those emotions kind of boiled over in the SC game. I thought it was kind of ridiculous too, right? So like he was screaming at the officials about all the contact, you know, that USC was fouling like Amari Bailey and their shooters. What'd you think about that? I didn't think like the officials were drastically pro SC in that game.
No, absolutely not. I mean, yeah. I know the one call that he got really upset with was like there's kind of a loose ball, and I think it was a Boogie who kind of like was fumbling for the ball, and someone came from behind, and it might even have been like Andrews or someone like that. It was maybe Bona, but someone was like fighting for the ball, and they just basically called a reach on that, which quite frankly I think was fine. No, I don't think that game was poorly or biasly officiated. I mean, I'm usually pretty sensitive to that. Not only do I not think it was an issue, I don't know why the officials would have cared enough to be biasly against UCLA in a game like that. I think they want UCLA to do well. So, no, I think that was him just losing his cool and knowing. I think, quite frankly, I think that was him recognizing that he had this problem the first time we played, where it manifested itself in the second half of the game, where we just completely dominated them. He knew he had time to fix the problem and resolve it, and it didn't get fixed. And the same stuff manifests itself. And over the last, as I said, over the last 60 minutes of play, we've outscored them by 30, and it would be by 40, except for those bad 4 minutes. I think that's what it was.
Yeah, now at least to me, there were kind of two calls in that game that stood out as particularly bad. And I did think overall it was a well-officiated game, especially compared to a lot of these Pac-12 games that you see.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
There was one play where I thought Kobe bumped a jump shooter. I'm not sure who it was. Do you remember this one? It was from the left elbow. Okay, there was one from the left elbow. I think he was trying to recover off of a ball screen, and maybe it was Tiger or someone pulled up. I thought he got bombed. I didn't even see like Mick like lose it after that one, because I don't think the reality had set in yet they were going to lose the game. So there was that. And the second one was they called Josh Morgan for this like ridiculous.
The hedge on the screen. Hedging a screen. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, and honestly, I think
insane.
I think the only reason they called that was Mick was already writing them, and they felt like they had to call it. But yeah, it was an almost perfect hedge. It was almost like the perfect way you want to play that. And he was punished for it. So yeah, that was a bad call. It was a bad call. And I thought at the time, I really thought that, you know, maybe the officials were going to get more involved, but they did not.
But those were the two calls that stood out. I mean, like, you know, these other calls, like this notion that like Amari Bailey was missing all his runners because he was fouled on like on all these shots was outrageous. I mean, it was total nonsense. But no, I mean, Mick does have that reputation as a hothead. And, you know, I guess to tie this back to our friends at Bro, like, yeah, like, I guess this is why you have players like, you know, every five-star recruit self-selecting out of UCLA basketball these days.
So. All right. So next question. In your next podcast, please have your usual X's and O's discussion on the UCLA game. I think Nick and I can do it. I finally was able to get the entire game, so I'm going to try to select some clips from both the first half and the second half to go over. We've talked about some of this stuff on this podcast. The first half, there was really only 4 bad minutes on defense. For the most part, we played strongly on defense both halves. There's issues on offense, and that's kind of touches on the next question. Why the team was so bad in the first half and so good in the second half. Was it really due to adjustments, or was it just that Boogie got hot and we made our free throws? We did make the adjustment in the, you know, and Andy was pretty up front about it in his post-game presser that we changed up what we were doing on offense. I actually thought the offense had really good ball movement. A lot in the first half, we just weren't quite getting the looks we needed to. And UCLA does play really good defense. I think they're a team that just sometimes exploiting the matchups works better, and that's what they did. And yeah, Boogie did get hot, and that was very helpful. And yes, we did hit our free throws. But we'll try to do a video covering just some of the where we had those problems in those 4 minutes, and then compare that to the rest of the first half. A lot of it, I think, was just concentration, just getting in the wrong spot on the court. Do you have any more to add on that one, or should I go to the next?
The one thing I'll add too is I think Vince played more minutes in the second half than he did in the first half. And I think that's part of it when you look at the on-off numbers.
Yeah. Okay. And last comment here. I'm very impressed by the team's play this season, which should be a rebuilding year. So are we playing far above our ability now due to luck or great team chemistry coaching, or finally up to our ability? Fight on. Okay. That's a great question. This is, I think, a great segue to what I kind of wanted to talk about was to finish the podcast, was just getting to a discussion about what our tournament prospects look like. So what team are we? Are we a team that's a bubble team, or, you know, just barely in, or are we a better team? So hard to say, and these things can change. There are various ways to measure these things. I think when it comes to just looking at, are we in the tournament? Are we not in the tournament? Everyone just use bracket matrix. There are something like 40 different mock brackets that they put up there. And even though there's some garbage in, garbage out element to it, they're usually pretty good about predicting who's going to be in, who's not. They currently have SC as an 11 seed. That comports, I think, with Lunardi, although I think they would have SC as a final four in. Lunardi has SC as a bye team, final four bye. Jerry Palm, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, SC as an 8 seed. And so we can talk about that in a second. So there are various rankings here that to be considered. The net ranking, which is the one that, you know, the NCAA is supposed to use, but it's unclear how much they do use it. We're number 52, which is not great. In KenPom, we're now at, what are we, 43 as of today? After yesterday, 42. We're back to 40. It's like we're bouncing around between 42 and 43. We're 42 right now, I think, because Michigan State lost so badly, we moved back up one. And in Torvik, I think we're now at 44. Sagarin, we're the best. I think we're at 37 in Sagarin. So we're right in the range of what you would expect for a team that's around the bubble, I would say. The difference is Torvik, this is barttorvik.com, by the way, has a great feature on his site where you can actually filter and do games at different, you know, times of the year and stuff like that. And also quad one, quad two. So in games that are quad three, and then there are 4 quads, right? So we're just imagine the toughest games, the easiest games. In the quad 3 and 4 games, SC is number, you want to guess on this one, Nick?
The quad 3 and quad 4 only. Oh, yeah. Gosh. 100?
84. So not a bad guess. Okay. We're 8-1 in those games. Keep in mind, we're 8-1 in those games. And yet we're 84th in the nation. And why are we so low? Because we have so many narrow wins against teams like Oregon State, Vermont, you know, not a particularly big win, I think, against Florida State. we're those are the games that
and Gold hurt. Coast, right?
Yes, Gulf Coast. We lost, right? That's a quad four also. That's our only loss. So yeah. So in those games we're not good. We're not a tournament team. In the quad one, quad two games, do you know what our record, what our ranking is?
I'd guess we're around maybe like 25.
We're number 30 now. We were earlier higher, but yeah, we're right. So we're clearly, if you're just going against how we're doing against good teams, we're in no problem. We're like an 8 seed. Now the other thing to consider is what about by date? So there's been a lot of, there's like different time periods on this team, right? There's the pre-thing, everything that happened before Thanksgiving was pretty terrible. And then there was the Thanksgiving to recently where you definitely saw an improvement with the team. And then there's been the more recent period when we got Vince back. So if you're looking at, let's see here. That first part of the season before we get to, we get to the games in the Battle for Atlantis, we're 170th in ranked team in the country, according to Torbeck. If you take the next period of time, which is from Thanksgiving up to the point where right before we're getting Vince back. So now we're talking about the games in Atlanta. So losing to Tennessee so closely in overtime, losing to Wisconsin tight, beating BYU, beating Auburn, winning the first couple Pac-12 games, but losing to Washington State. In that period of time, we are number 47 in the country. Okay. So we've gone from 170 to 47. And then if you take this last period, which is starting with the return events and how we've played since then, we are number 14 in the country. So since we got Vince back, we just keep getting better. We've gotten better progressively. And I think obviously part of that is just figuring out the point guard situation, getting guys like Kobe and Trey White acclimated to our team, Joshua Morgan kind of finding what role he's going to have. Guys, Drew not being so crazy with the turnovers. And now kind of settling into where we are. And over the last five games, which encompasses the mountain schools at Galen, the road trip to Arizona, which even had the bad loss to Arizona, and the beating UCLA at Galen, we're number 14 in the country over that period of time. So the answer to the question is, in my estimation, that if we can continue the current trajectory, we're a good team. We're solidly in the tournament. We might not be the 14th best team in the country, but I think we can pretty well play with almost anybody in the country when we're right and we keep our concentration. But we're very narrow margins here. But you know, lacking that point guard, if you start to turn the ball over, we're not a great shooting team, and we're not a good rebounding team. If we were just a good rebounding team, you could almost think, okay, well, the rebounding and defense will just take care of itself and we'll just eke out these wins. The problem is the rebounding is not enough, I think, to carry us. And as a result of that, you know, since these last five games, we're only 27th best in the country in defense, but that's really because of the ranked rebounding. So that's where I am with this stuff. Anything you know, I'm just going to give you the floor, Nick. What are your thoughts here?
Sure. Yeah. So one other ranking system that's kind of cool is Haslametrics. You can go follow Eric Haslam on Twitter. He's always talking about basketball, but they've got SC at 33 in their ranking, and they have, he has kind of a ranking, cool ranking that's called momentum, or it's like a stat where he defines it as just a measure of the team's last 4 to 8 performances versus its overall season performance. And SC is fifth in the country in that right now. At least they were as of this morning. They're fifth. So just further evidence that, you know, and you can see that they're getting better, right, game by game. The other thing too that I would add just on top of your point that, you know, we're a top 20, you know, team with Vince back. You say we were 14th. Is that right?
Yes.
In games that he's played, right? You could even break that down further. And then you kind of get into the problem of small sample sizes. But in those first few Vince games, right, like he was barely making any impact. So that the games that he's really, I think you've started to see what kind of player he could be are it's that ASU game and the UCLA game, right? And even within that smaller sample, right, of Colorado home, Utah home, at Arizona, ASU home, ASU road, UCLA home, these last two were the best two games in that stretch, right? So if you get more of the Vince between, you know, the Vince of the ASU game and the UCLA game, and maybe even getting better as he further gets acclimated to college basketball, we're a pretty scary team. I mean, there's a lot to like, and you know, we'll have a lot of opportunities here down the stretch. A lot of these quad one games are very winnable, I think. Like at Oregon, at Colorado, at Utah are all quad ones. Arizona home's a quad one. I'm not saying you're going 4-for-4 in that stretch or anything like that, but let's just say you win the non-quad one games, which is Wazoo home, Washington home, Oregon State road, Cal home, Stanford home. And ASU home. I think you're into the tournament if you do that. And if you can pick off like a few of these quad one games, like, you know, at Colorado or at Utah, really any of them. You know, KenPom has those four quad one games between 39 and 45% to win each of them individually. I do think they're kind of understating us because, you know, they haven't accounted for the, you know, the Vince factor of the whole thing. But, you know, you win a couple of those, then I think you're starting to push towards a high seed potentially. And you could wind up like a 6 seed or 7 seed or something like that.
Yeah. And if you do, if we were able to kind of keep this momentum going with Vince on Vince playing, I mean, part of it too, is like Boogie's shot lights out. I don't know if that's going to continue, but yeah. You know, just the teams in the conference over that period of time that have played the best are obviously us and Arizona, not a surprise, UCLA, Utah, actually number 35, Oregon, number 53. So that road game in Oregon is going to be huge. Then it's like Stanford, which we didn't really get to on this podcast. Maybe we'll get to on a later one. But after that, the rest of the conference has not been playing too well recently. So it's important that we don't drop these games. These Washington schools coming to town. Maybe we'll talk. I don't know if we can do another podcast later this week or just hop on and do this analysis. UCLA, we'll talk about Washington State a little bit. But yeah, we've you know, you got to just take some of this. Just take care of business. You know, got to take care of business. Take care of business against Washington State at Corvallis. Take care of business. Take care of business. The Bay Area schools when they come to town after that. You know, so you're talking about 5 of the next 6 games. SC really should win for sure, and that's like then you have this like game in Oregon that's a little tricky. Then that would set you up for these final 4 games of the season to see, okay, are you going to be able to take the conference, you know, get within a game and take in the conference, you know, the mountain schools on the road and the Arizona games. So what we need to focus on, I think, is these next 6 games, if we can get those things, you know, where we're really locked in and, you know, winning 5 or winning all 6, that'd be huge. I guess I'll throw it to you. Yeah. If Nick, what would you say, if you could pre-pick those next 6 games at 5-1, would you take it?
Wow. Well, I'm glad I changed my mind on the pre-picking the previous 3 at 1 and 2. that worked out with us taking 2 out of those 3. If I could pre-pick it at 5-1, I would say no, actually. I would not take it. Although, like, I think 5-1 is like a very acceptable outcome where, like, I wouldn't be unhappy with it. But I don't see us losing. I know, like, you know, Washington scares you like a little bit. I don't see us losing that game at home. Oregon, I think Cal is a bye game at home, and Stanford, Gosh, could we lose to Haas? I guess we could, but I don't really see that happening. And then Wazoo, I think we're going to be pretty focused. It's definitely a losable game, but I feel pretty good about it. So I would say no. But like let's say we lose to Oregon and win the others, I think we're still in like a pretty good spot heading into the Final Four.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think that's the case. Okay, anything else before we get out of here?
That's all I got.
All right. Let me try to pack it in as well as we could. Okay. We'll try, like I mentioned now a couple times, we'll try to do a feature here, and do some video highlights and analysis of the UCLA game, and then we'll do some picks later in the week, Washington State. We'll figure out how to do that. But until then, everybody, fight on.
Right on.